It's the Food Talk Show, produced by Channel Radio. It's the Food Talk Show with me, Paul Andrews, and the lovely Sue Nelson. Good afternoon, Sue. How are you?
Hello, Paul. I'm good. Good weather yet again.
It's gorgeous out there, isn't it?
It's good, it's good.
It's a bit chilly in here, mind.
It is quite chilly in here. Yeah. We've got no alcohol this week.
We've got what?
No alcohol this week, which must be a first.
Steps back in amazement.
Which means you can taste everything that we have in the studio, which is we've got loads of food cluttering up the studio.
Well, that's a first. I'm teetotal, you see, so I never get to taste the alcohol. And they always have tons of alcohol in here. None.
Yeah, right. So we've got none. So we have Lisa Sohenpal with us, and she's from Nom Nom's World Food.
I love that too. Nom Nom.
Yep. And
nom.
She produces the most amazing curries, and I can't wait to taste some of those. I'm a great, great curry fan. And we have somebody called Ian Perry who is never called Ian Perry. His name is actually Badger.
Yeah.
And he's from Badger's Dairy Free. And he's going to talk to us about his amazing thing that he's making, which I don't even know where to begin on this. And he makes egg mayonnaise with no egg or no mayonnaise for vegans. No, seriously.
I'm not going to say anything.
No, I'm serious. I make lots
of things like that.
No. And apparently it's amazing. And so we're going to have a little taste of that because how do you do that?
I'm looking forward to that because I just can't even conceptualise that.
And well, I'm looking at it and it looks normal, doesn't it, from here?
I can't see over the desk.
Oh, well, it looks normal.
Oh, yeah.
So
how did that happen?
I don't know because we have a taste of that.
Oh, yeah.
But before we do all that, I want to talk to you about curry.
I like curry.
I know you do. You see, everyone seems to argue over the origins of curry and how it came to be the most popular restaurant meal in Britain, which it is today. Mm-hmm. And even where the word curry comes from is debatable.
Yep.
So I don't know what your views are, but some people say it means gravy or sauce.
I've not been part of the debate over the name curry. I'm familiar with the myth that what we call a curry in the UK was kind of invented by the colonial army to stop their meat going rot, or to so they could eat rotten meat or something.
I think I can safely say that's complete garbage.
But I think that's an urban myth myself.
It's garbage, yeah. Some people think that curry just means hot, or that it means to cook, but nobody can actually say what curry
means. It's like chow mein in Chinese. In Mandarin, chow mein just means everything in the pot, doesn't it?
Yeah, I guess so. There are also arguments over authenticity.
Mm-hmm.
Is the stuff we have over here stuff they have in India? You know, is it hot? Is it supposed to be hot? Is it supposed to be mild? Can you eat a better version in the UK than India? And what are the essential ingredients? And nobody seems to agree on anything.
I think for me the reality of this is what you're talking about is food produced by different cultures using different spices. Yeah. The fact that we've adopted it in the UK and made it a massive pastime with curry houses and things like Balties, which I believe were actually invented in Birmingham.
Probably.
you've adapted a cultural food to suit the palate of a different culture, and therefore it kind of takes off like that. But if you've ever eaten traditional food in India or Pakistan or Bangladesh or Sri Lanka or somewhere like that, it's there's a vast array of things and different foods that you wouldn't just say is curry.
I've just finished this book called Curry.
Really?
A Tale of Cooks and Conquerors, and it's by Lizzie Collingham.
Right.
And it was absolutely fascinating, actually, and it literally is the history of curry, and she's researched it. And some say it is the definitive book on the history of curry. I don't know if it is. But I don't know if you know Hannah Glass, who was a famous cookery writer of the 1700s. She first published a curry recipe in English in 1747.
Really?
And that was described as how to make a curry the India way. So
right.
We're talking about hundreds of years.
Mm.
And her curry was very mild and inoffensive. And if you fast forward to Victorian times, which is this sort of heyday of the colonial stuff, they didn't really like that sort of stuff because they really like their curries hot And there's one Victorian gentleman said he preferred his curry as hot as the hinges of hell's front door, which I thought was really good. And at this time, there was also a debate about the wholesomeness of curry. Some people say it's really good for you. It's and certainly Captain White, who made curry paste in the 19th century, he really hyped up its medicinal qualities and said that curry is highly digestive. It's anti-bilious. Never heard of that.
Spasmodic. Oh, I like that. No, I'm sticking with that. I'm going with the first description.
And anti-flatulent, which in my experience is the opposite.
I don't think that's going to work somehow.
Soothing and invigorating to the stomach and bowels. That was his version of why curry is good for you.
But there's also the modern take on it that hot food with chilies and things is actually a calorie burner as well.
I don't know if that's true, because you eat quite a lot of curry and you don't seem to have lost any weight.
No, that is true. Yeah.
I'm not sure how true that is.
But I think that's mostly the poppadoms and the chapatis that go with it that really do it.
And you might think that curries in restaurants are fairly recent, but it's not. It wasn't unusual for coffee houses and taverns of British cities to serve curries alongside their normal menus as far back as the 1700s. Mm. So we have had a real tradition of it. But if I return to Lizzie Collingham's book... She believes that curry has a long history of invasion and the fusion of different food traditions, which I think you could say probably for almost any country. Mm. And she explains how the arrival of Portuguese explorers and the cooking styles of Central Asia and Persia and Europe across four centuries, all mixed in with traditional Indian food, is actually the result of what we would call curry now. It's a real mongrel, isn't it? Sort of hybrid stuff. Mm. And Portuguese spice merchants, for example, they introduced vinegar marinades, which was probably where this chutney thing comes from. Mm. And of course, the British love roast meat. Yeah. So that sort of was added to it. And of course, new sort of ingredients like cardamom and black pepper. And these are all sort of giving birth to dishes like biryani and jalfrezi and vindaloo.
Oh, so jalfrezi.
Very Portuguese driven, I think. And then you might know there was a bit of fall in popularity of curries in the mid-1800s until probably the early 20th century, so it was a bit of a lull. And then Indian sailors who worked on British boats jumped ship and set up homes in some of the English ports, including Cardiff and London. They were mostly from Sylhet, in what is now Bangladesh, and they opened cafes for their fellow Asians because they couldn't get the food that they wanted, obviously. Sure. And in the 1940s, they were incredibly enterprising, and they opened up cafes in the sort of bombed out chippies, and started selling curry and rice alongside fish pie and chips, and that's where it all sort of came to a head, I guess. And that's how the late night curry started, because nobody else was open. And they sort of realised that, if you're on the way home for a beer and you've had a few, whatever, and you're hungry, they stayed open late at night. And that's, good for them. They're hard workers and very, very enterprising.
And I have to say, it's hardly changed. I drove through my little town the other night, very late on the way home. And a mate of mine, Raja, owns a chain of Bangladeshi restaurants. And Raja was the only one open. All the other restaurants were closed. So I had to pop in, say hello to Raja.
Of course you did. There you go.
Yeah.
I've seen that's it.
Yeah.
And then following a war in their home country, many Bangladeshis came to London around 1971. And that's when the curry house industry really started in earnest to cater for British diners. And to this day, around 3/4 of the 8,000 curry houses are still owned by Bangladeshis.
Yeah.
So it's a really, really interesting history, isn't it? And I love cooking curry.
It is.
I absolutely love cooking curry.
What I found... As I say, Raja, my friend, you must know Raja's Curry House at High Holden in the old...
Oh, yes, I do.
On the bend there into Tenterston.
Yeah.
Raja owns that and the Mutchuk and Raja's in Maidstone. And when Raja opened his shop, his second shop, he went for a number of very unusual and different dishes, compared to what you normally had.
Yeah.
If you went into a normal curry house,
you can almost predict the menu.
Yeah,
you're
going to have chicken and it's going to be Madras or Vindaloo. Or if you're with your mates
masala.
And you've been drinking, it's a Vindaloo pal. And, you'll dip your tongue in sugar and all the rest of it. But he did duck and venison and a whole range of different meats and different tastes and different spices. Which, when he first opened, like 15, 20 years ago, everybody flocked there.
It was really
because
different.
It was really different.
I mean, yeah. My favourite now is Gymkhana, right. Just in Mayfair, and that is extraordinary. It, you know, and they've got quail, and they've got, yeah. You know, my favourite there is goat keema. Yeah. Sounds horrible. It's incredible. It's to die for. Yeah. and they're making amazing stuff. So, should we have a little bit of music and talk to Lisa?
Yeah, we can. Just before, I just want to up the ante with you and your Gymkhana. Now, have you tried Bloody Marys on the King's Road? At the end,
no, I'm at sorry. The end for me, Gymkhana at the moment is that's my favourite.
Bloody Marys is really good as well.
My favourite.
Yeah. Cool. I'll tell you what.
Perhaps a few listeners can, you know, tweet in what their favourite.
Tweet in their favourite restaurant. Yeah. We normally do some cheesy tuna at this stage. I was at a loss for something ultra cheesy, so I just went for this, which has no relevance to anything really, apart from the fact that it's
about food,
almost food related.
That's not bad. Rolling Stones.
Keith and the boys there, Brown Sugar.
Mick, Keith and the boys.
Yeah.
So I'm joined by Lisa Soempel from Nom Nom's World Foods, and she makes ready meals. Now, I'm not a great fan of ready meals, as you know, Paul, but that's because I think I lump them all in under the same umbrella. So I'm going to talk to Lisa about you know, maybe how we get a different name for some of these things, because some ready meals are absolutely awful. And if we look at the things here and the ingredients she's got, they're that's completely different.
I know it's different. You're younger than me, but do you remember when you were
marginally.
A kid, the very first ready meals you used to get were Vesta beef curries?
My dad used to work there.
Really?
Yeah, he was a maintenance man. He used to come home and stink of curry
really?
Every night.
Really?
And not nice curry either.
Yeah. Do you remember them? Though? They were horrible.
Yeah, horrible. They used to have like crispy things, like toenails.
That's what I was going to say. Yeah.
So anyway, obviously Lisa's an amazing entrepreneur and her and her husband, Dr. Imrat Sampal, have won loads of awards so far. I mean, so many, you can barely actually mention them. And she's created this healthy, internationally inspired alternative to traditional ready meals. Mm. No added salt, no sugar. And their aim is to create simply the healthiest, tastiest ready meals for children and grown-ups. And they've got a really interesting range available with exotic flavours.
You were telling me about this, and I was interested by that. And I think it's a really clever idea, and hopefully we'll talk to Lisa about it in a minute. But the fact that you've got kids' meals as well.
Yeah, it's really good because you can get the normal product, and I'm sure Lisa's going to tell us about this, but you get the tiny equivalent for children, which is not a great idea.
So
you get
I think it's brilliant,
why don't people do that?
I can buy two as well.
Yes, please. Dearie me. Chicken tiffin is one of the one of these lovely meals, and that's butter chicken marinated in cream. Look at you. Masalas and a tomato puree. And there's a crispy, ticky appetizer to go with it, made of sweet potato and butternut squash. We're going to have a try of that.
I'm looking forward to that. Do you know, I first ate butter chicken on Boat Quay in Singapore. That's where I was introduced to butter chicken, and I absolutely fell in love with it. But it's a bit of a long way to go for dinner.
Slightly. And then there's a fish tali, which has got rice and coral and fish curry. So that's quite nice. And then I think there's other things, like there's a lamb tiffin, there's a veggie tagine, there's chicken laksa. So we're going to have a little taste of those in a minute. And Lucy, our lovely producer, is outside at the moment. Just
cooking
heating it all up and going to bring that in. Can't wait.
So I'm dribbling.
I know you are. Lisa, hi there.
Hi.
Why did you call it Nom Noms? Great name.
Well, Nom Noms in any language is the sound that one makes when eating delicious food.
Nom, nom, nom. Mm. Yeah,
exactly.
Paul does that a lot.
So that's why we call the Nom Noms, because we wanted people to remember the name, obviously. But and mini Nom Noms is smaller portions, mega Nom Noms is the bigger portions.
I see. And I'm just looking at the packaging here. It's not your normal ready meal packaging, is it, Paul? It's sort of... I don't know, it looks really friendly and sort of, organically.
It's nice, yeah.
Really nice and friendly. And you know, some of these ready meals have got plastic on the top and they look artificial and they look lovely.
It has a look to me from here, without my glasses on, it has a kind of retro look as well.
Sort of, yeah. Sort of.
Do you know what I mean?
It's sort of a world, global look.
Yeah, it looks classy. It does look really classy.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Classy. So, tell me about ready meals. I have obviously got this aversion to them, but that's because I shove everything in the same bracket.
Exactly.
There's some real developments in ready meals now, isn't there? In fact, perhaps we shouldn't call it that, should we, ready meals?
So they have moved away from calling it ready meals to prepared meals.
Mm, yeah.
And I actually didn't know this category existed before I got into it. Mm. When I was deciding, you know, how to actually present this concept, should I go into ambient, should I go into frozen or chilled, I wanted to see what I wanted to kind of replicate what I was doing at home for my children. Mm. And that because I never had time to cook, and I wanted my children to grow up with, diverse cuisines and have a diverse palate. And rarely in world foods do you eat only one dish for dinner. You know, you've got multiple dishes going on. And I wanted my children to be brought up that way and experience it all. So, you know, what I was doing at home was cooking batches of curry and then freezing it and then defrosting and serving at the right time. And I was like, "What? Isn't there anything readily available that is authentic, it's healthy, and can provide a guilt-free option for parents?" Because like you said, you know, ready meals isn't the very sexiest category to be in.
No, I mean, my worst nightmare is the 99p huge lasagna from Iceland.
Yeah,
I mean,
exactly.
What is in there
exactly
if it costs 99p?
I think in that old-style ready meal market, that was the problem, is that it's chock full of chemicals and preservatives and salt and sugar and all kinds of stuff. And everybody knows that now.
Yeah.
And everybody goes, do you know what? That's not very healthy.
Yeah.
It doesn't even taste very nice though, Paul. That's the thing, I think.
And it's generally processed as well. And what I was looking for as a mum, a real mum, before becoming an entrepreneur was to, what would I buy and what would I trust in a brand? Mm. And I wanted Nom Noms to engender trust. So people, whenever they see a Nom Noms brand, they know that it's made with no additives, preservatives, you know.
Talk amongst yourself.
Healthy. Oh,
the food's arrived.
So Lucy's just walked in, our producer, and my goodness me, we've got loads of lovely things here. So let me just
what have you got them? Oh, that's better.
So we've got three here. So just so this is the chicken.
So you've got a Malaysian coconut lemongrass chicken laksa with rice noodles.
Wow, that looks great.
And
next
you've
to that
got
is
a Carolyn fish curry with rainbow rice.
And then this is the chicken.
And then you've got the spinach butter chicken.
Right.
With pilau
I'm going to put this in. Paul's already got his fork in his hand. I haven't even put them down on the table yet. I'm going to put this in between us, and it's piping hot, so you need to eat this now, Paul, as if I needed to tell you that.
What a blow.
Because we don't want it to go cold, and it's quite cold in the
studio.
While you're doing that, I'm going to have a look at all the little accompaniments. Don't make too much noise at the microphone.
Okay, I'll try not to slabber.
And tell us about the accompaniments that you have there. What's the idea of having the accompaniments?
Yeah, so it's to replicate a two-course meal. And so you get your appetizer and your chutney, and then you've got the main meal. And it's designed to replicate what you have, you know, in traditional, authentic homes around the world. And everything is made in a way that it's very nutritional, because you wouldn't believe that in every dish there's hidden fruits and vegetables to really bring the nutrition qualities of the product. And that's something I learned quite quickly when we were trying to replicate a kitchen recipe to a commercial scale. Because everything has to be measured. You've got to make sure if you're going to claim, if it's your two of your five a day for children, that it actually does contain, your two lots of vegetable.
And if your children like curry, hiding vegetables in it is actually quite an easy thing to do, isn't it, really, if they really like their spice.
Exactly. So. But the challenge was, how do you create an authentic flavour when you're adding all these things in the sauce,
Can you just, while Paul is clearing his palate, can you just tell us what these are? So you've got lots of little sauces. There's mango chutney, isn't there?
So your appetizers are probably on its way, but the sweet potato and butternut squash sticky goes with the date and tamarind chutney. Now, all of our chutneys are made with no added sugar, and I believe there is no chutney on the market that is made with no added sugar.
Right.
And so we have sweetened these naturally with fruits, with sweet fruit. So all the meals contain only its natural, salt and sugar that comes from its vegetables and fruit. That's a chutney there. Then we've got apple and mint chutney that goes with the vegetable bonda. And then we have the plum and garlic dip that goes with the spring roll. And then we've got the roasted red pepper and rose harissa dip that goes with the Moroccan bread.
Cool. Right. I've now tasted all of those dishes that you had, and I'm just about to start on the second course. But before that, I need to report back on the first course. My initial reaction to all of those dishes was, it's homemade.
Thank you.
Seriously, it had high quality homemade taste all about it. It certainly wasn't a ready meal. It wasn't remotely like a ready meal. The nearest I would say is it was like a very good upmarket takeaway, but it was actually more just like home cooked food.
Exactly.
Very tasty. And the thing that I love, as long as you're not pulling the wool over our eyes, and I don't suspect you are, is that it's much healthier because you've paid a lot of attention to the ingredients in there. Now, one of the problems with that is, of course, is because people put salt and sugar and stuff in food, they do that for a reason. They do that for you to make you like the taste.
Yeah.
And if you take it out, you can end up with something quite bland if you're not careful.
Exactly.
But there was absolutely nothing bland about any of that.
Thank you.
No, that's just I've just had one of those little appetizer things.
Which one?
I don't know. It's the greeny pea one.
The pea and paneer tikki.
That's quite spicy, isn't it? Yeah, yeah, thanks for warning us on that one.
What's this one, Lisa?
It's a pea empanada tikki, and you're supposed to have that with the apple and mint chutney.
To calm it down.
Yes, yeah, yes. Thanks. So you've got that sweetness, you know, combined with...
It's not hot enough for you, Paul, but it was hot for me. Yeah.
I could eat five of those.
So, when I can get these meals from Ocado, can't I? And I know you've got them in Selfridges as well.
Actually. We did a soft launch last year with Selfridges and Ocado. And we wanted to test the appetite for the British customer, you know, if they would fall for this concept and really love it. And to our surprise, we were selling out of stock continuously. And we then had to take the foot off the pedal and go back and to the drawing board and say, right, there seems to be a real gap in the market, first of all. There isn't anything that is a family-focused food brand, because what we wanted to encourage was families eating dinners together and enjoying world flavors together. Mm. Now, you go to an Indian restaurant or any other restaurant, there's not really any curry that's made suitable for a child's palate. It's, you know, you give them a naan maybe and you try your luck with a korma, but it's high in salt. It's got your sugars in there. Yeah. It's oily or too spicy. So we wanted, you know, everyone to be able to enjoy world food together and know that it's actually really good for you too. Mm-hmm. And what we found is we're attracting a new customer group like yourself, you know, who normally would stay away from ready meals because of that reason. There was that guilty conscience as well. But now there's no need to, because we're not only doing the great food and healthiness, but we want to go beyond food and really inspire and engage our customers and take them on a taste adventure around the world.
I think for me, what I used to find difficult is when the kids were at secondary school and they got to be 13, 14, 15 and they were coming home from school, you know, they're not having after school, something going on, and then getting home at 5 or 6 o'clock. Yeah. I wasn't getting home till later than that. And of course, as soon as they get in, they are starving hungry.
Yeah.
And so I used to spend ages trying to work out what they could have that they could cook themselves, you know, when they got home. This is perfect for that, isn't it?
Exactly.
Because what I found is if we didn't eat till later as a family, until 7 o'clock, they'd have eaten something else as well. So what they were ending up doing was eating two meals in the evening, which is not really what you want them to do.
Exactly.
And this is ideal if you've got teenage children, isn't it? So they can prepare their own. And I really like the fact that there's all these different sauces. There's this sort of two-course thing. Paul's just chomping his way through the...
I'm just eating. Just I know. Talk amongst yourselves.
And it's these sort of additional appetizer things as well. That's great. That's great for children, because there's some really nice textures going on, isn't there?
Yeah, yeah. For children, we really wanted to say, look, you know, let's engage your senses and eat like the Indians do in India and the Malaysians do in Malaysia. You know, really mix, dip, pour, sprinkle and experience the flavours. And the kids love it. They just love it, rather than you saying, here's your dinner, eat it, you know.
Not just kids.
Yes, I can see.
I absolutely adore this. This is fabulous. And you would never in a million years believe this was a microwaved ready meal, which is intrinsically what we're eating here. Yeah, because we've only got a microwave oven here.
Yeah, I mean, I think curries are easy to microwave because generally it's like stews and stuff. You know, you've got some liquid and it's fine as long as the meat's good meat.
Yeah.
The trick for me, the hard thing with ready meals is actually doing the, you know, you've got pastry there, you've got rice, you've got, those are the things that are hard to get right on a ready meal, aren't they?
Yeah, yeah, totally. Especially when you've got them all in one kind of pack, you know.
Yeah, how do you do that?
And heating at different temperatures and all of that.
I would live on this. I really would. I mean, the different flavours of the different dishes are fabulous. The side dishes and accoutrements, and then, you know, the chutneys and various things to go with it. Absolutely fabulous. I'm absolutely loving this. I really do.
Why don't you go on Ocado and order some of those, Paul, rather than trotting down the kebab shop on a Friday?
Exactly.
It'd be much better.
Well, exactly. If I had a couple
You'd
of these...
You'd need to order two, obviously, not just one.
Yeah, obviously, I'd need all of them. But if I had some of these in the fridge, I wouldn't have to do that.
It's really nice, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, my problem with my... I live on my own, and my problem with my lifestyle is I work really long hours. So I live in a town, but not a very big town, and the only thing that's open at 11 o'clock at night is either Raj's place or the kebab van. Yeah. So, you know, I about turn them, really.
Which is why your blood pressure's so high.
Yeah, exactly. But I'd love this. Yeah,
it's good. Mm. So I wanted to talk to you about Indian cuisine, if I can. Again, I really like cooking Indian food. My favourite ever curry book is called 50 Great Curries of India by Camellia Punjabi.
Oh, that is the one I was going to say, it's really good.
It is the best book.
Yes.
And that actually completely changed my perception of how you cook curries. And it was a real revelation to me that actually you add spices at different times for different reasons. Because I thought you just bung them all in, either at the beginning or at the end. Didn't realise that you staged it.
Yes.
Are you influenced by stuff like that, surely?
Yeah, of course. I mean, we've been brought up, eating curry, and traditional Punjabi curries are different from Gujarati curries and all around India. So, traditional family recipes is what we go with, and we've not ever consulted a book to make a curry, because it's like what your mum has told you, and what everyone in the family and the way they're cooking.
Yeah, it's like me with Sunday lunch. I cook Sunday lunch because that's how my mum taught me to make it.
Yeah.
I've never thought of looking at a recipe for it, because why would you?
Yeah, exactly. But the funny thing was that when we were developing these recipes, and we've been working on it for 2 years in trying to get it right, and we've had professional taste testers, testing the food and making sure that it was suitable for the mass palate. And and I tried to put my version in there too, because I thought my fish curry always goes down well with friends. And I put my version in there. And when it came to taking a spoon of mine, she said, it's too many back notes. Oh, like back notes.
That's the whole point of Indian food, is you get this amazing array of tastes that are going on.
But never. I mean, I've got my spice tin, and it's like magic. You put a bit of this, bit of this, and you use your gut feel on what it's going to turn out to be like. But having to produce a recipe that's going to go into, into public, onto shelves, was making sure that we used a spice expert, a culinary spice expert, that would bring the flavors together, that would make sure that they are authentic to each cuisine. Because they all do use similar spices. And it's exactly what you're saying is, in our Moroccan tagine, there may be a different balance of the coriander and the cumin compared to the Indian curry.
Yeah.
So, we use a spice expert to make sure that all the flavors were blended and balanced to suit a child's palate first, and then make it tasty enough for the grown-ups. And we wanted to also be a brand focusing on world flavors, but bringing spices and the benefits of spices to the forefront.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because they are good for you.
So if we're talking about spices, we can't talk about Indian food without talking about garam masala.
Yeah.
And garam masala is a mixture.
Yeah.
Every family has its own sort of version, I would guess.
Yes.
And and then most people put it in. They'll still add lots of other spices to it as well, won't they? But it tends to be their sort of signature base spice mix. Would you say that's a good description?
Yes, totally. And everyone makes it different if you're making from
scratch. So tell us what's in your family one. You don't have to tell us the combination, because I know it's always secret for families. But
it is, again, magic. My mum in Sydney makes it different to my mother-in-law in Wales. And I remember when we were we had a marquee at Jamie Oliver's festival, and we were testing the concept whether we should add an extra spice sachet to each meal for the mega nom nom. So, you can make it as hot as you like, and it'll be the first time we give the opportunity for seasoning your food according to your own taste. And I thought that was a brilliant idea. And so my mother-in-law was roasting all the spices for each cuisine in the kitchen, 2 days before, and in big pots, roasting away. And if I asked for the recipe, it was going to be a whole list of ingredients and spices and in different combinations. But then again, it's when do you add this in? When do you add that in? And timing wise. So I actually don't know the exact recipe my mother-in-law gave us. Yeah. But every time she says, do not buy from the shops.
Yeah.
Make your own. She makes a batch of garam masala, and she will, personally deliver it and make sure that we use that.
But well, you'll be proud of me. I make garam masala, but it's quite cardamom seed heavy.
Right.
So that's a nice sort of sour note.
Sadly, we've got to move on because we're coming towards the end.
Can I just ask, you've got a question for us?
I've got a question. Yes. Where can I get it?
Where can you get it? We're relaunching. So at the moment, we've had to come out and relaunch in a different way. So we'll be available from January.
Okay.
Through Ocado and Amazon Fresh in the UK.
Fabulous.
You need to get some of that when that's back out again.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And then just finally, tiffin. Yes. So you've called this chicken tiffin.
Yes.
I think I know what tiffin is. Can you just explain to us what tiffin is?
Yeah, so tiffins actually are not only an Indian thing, as I've learned as well. They're used in Southeast Asia as well. And it's like a lunchbox, essentially. In India, the wives usually prepare the lunch for their husband and they pack it in the tiffin box. And there's a food delivery service here in the UK. Lunches are actually delivered in tiffin boxes to people to work. And that's where the idea of the names came from, because the tiffin to represent the multi-compartments, lunch type, dinner type arrangement, and you can have it in any format.
So in Japan, you'll get a bento box, which is square and whatever. Yeah. But tiffin for me always, I've got one at home, which has got, it's got about four metal round
that's
sachets,
right.
And it's got a sort of case around it, if you like. Yes. And these boys literally carry hundreds of them around. Yeah. Apparently, they always remember what combination is everybody's, you know, that they're delivering. How they do that, I don't know. And then, of course, they go and collect them at the end of the day and then washed up and then the next lot comes back. I mean, really good way of being environmentally friendly, actually.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, they're exactly.
Cool. Well, fascinating. Shall we have a little bit of fruit and nut, actually.
Yeah, a bit of wee hay Essendon we've got now. But it'll give me the chance to finish that curry.
Well, there isn't much left for me because I've been talking, so I'm going to have a little bit now. And obviously then we're going to come back and speak to Badger.
We are indeed. So we've got a pre-recorded interview.
With Emily.
So have a listen to this.
Today we are making some fruit and nut no-bake slices. These require very little skill. They're generally really popular. I catered a party with them, and despite doing four massive trays, they went really quickly and people were coming back offering me huge amounts of money. And they're really simple, so it feels like a good little cheat, this one. You can use pretty much any nut flour you like and pretty much any sort of fruit, whether it's figs or dates or prunes. We're going to go with a bit of a figgy prune mix this time, so good for the digestive system. There's no added extra sugar either. All the sweetness comes from the fruit. All you'll need really is a food processor and a lined tray and some space in the fridge to put them. Okay, so I am starting off with about a cup and a half of porridge oats. These can be gluten-free oats, they can be any sort of oat that you really like, and I've got a cup of ground almonds as well. And I'm just going to weigh out a cup of desiccated coconut. So that's about a cup's worth. I'm just going to add that to my food processor with the other dry bits. I really like this recipe as well because it's kind of rough guessing. You don't have to measure things out exactly. You can just see how it goes. So I'm just going to whiz this for a bit to make sure the oats get a little bit more fine. Okay, and that's done. I'm now going to do the same thing again, but I'm going to throw in a couple of prunes to make it all sticky. So these are already pitted. I'm just going to throw in 1, 2, 3, 4, about 15, and then give that a whiz. Okay, and so there's a little bit of prune mix going on there. I'm now going to add to the mix, whilst it's running, some coconut oil. I'm going to start with 1/4 cup and see how that goes. Okay, so I've just weighed out about 1/4 cup of coconut oil. I'm now going to make it noisy again and turn on the food processor whilst adding the coconut oil so the nut flours start to bind to it. Fab. Okay, so that didn't take long at all. It's in like a nice sort of biscuity, crispy base. It's all a bit sticky, and I'm just going to take this out and press it into a pre-lined tin. You'll probably want about an 8x8 tray. Mine is slightly bigger than that, so mine are going to come out a little bit thinner. But just tip the whole lot in. Oop. You can save back, say, a handful, or maybe two big handfuls, to sprinkle on the top afterwards. It makes it look nice. and adds an extra texture. So just pushing that sticky mixture all into the tray. Obviously, if it comes about and it's a bit too dry, then feel free to add more coconut oil as you whiz it around. Okay, just make sure you push it into all the corners and get it nice and firm as a base, a bit like if you're doing a cheesecake. Okay, nearly there. Just a little bit more in that corner. So I'm gonna keep my reserved couple of handfuls for the topping and just pop that in a bowl, because we're gonna use the food processor again. Let's just get all that out. It doesn't matter if there's a bit in there. It's all going in the same thing. Okay, so back in my food processor, I am going to do a figgy topping because I quite like figs. So I'm going to go with about 15 figs again. And I'm going to add about half a cup of water. So straight back in the food processor, make sure it's all on properly and whiz that round. I'm just going to scrape the edges down, have a look, and I think I might add a few more figs, make it a little bit thicker. It's a bit watery at the minute. Okay, so let's have three, five more. Ooh. Good, that's looking much better now. It's much thicker, and it looks more like a topping rather than a sauce. Okay, so these are really like fig rolls, I suppose, but much healthier and much easier to do. They only take a few minutes and anyone can make them. Quite good for a holiday if you're making stuff with the children. There's absolutely no knife skills involved, which is good, because I tend to be quite awkward. And so I'm just going to spread the figgy topping all over the top. These are also really suitable for anyone with, for most diets really, I suppose, unless you've got an issue with nuts. Because there's no added sugar, there's no dairy, there's no eggs, there's no flour. You can use gluten-free oats, or you could leave oats out and just use lots and lots of different types of nut. And like I said, you can substitute any sort of topping. These work really well with dates as well. And also, you don't have to have nut flours either. You could just start off with a whole nut and food process it until it's nice and fine. So that topping's looking good. It's covered the whole thing. It's one of the first times I've managed to do that. First go. Okay. Make sure I get all of the last little bits out, because this is where all the tasty sweetness is. And spread it out evenly. And then that topping that I had left over from earlier, or base, is now going to become a topping. So I'm just going to sprinkle my little nut mix all over the top, just rather haphazardly. It doesn't have to be neat and tidy or flattened down. Just sprinkle it on there. Give it a bit of texture. Okay. And these are going to go in the fridge for, well, I'd say an hour to be safe. Depends on your fridge. And then we can come back and taste them in a bit. Okay, so we've got out the fridge. It has been chilling in there for nearly an hour. It's definitely solid and firm enough now that if I lift it out on the paper, it all stays in one nice big gooey fruity lump. So I'm just going to try and find a knife and let's cut off a little square. I've also brought in with me the equivalent of a child, which is a 32-year-old, because that's also in the house. That's why I've got to hand. And he's gonna have a little nibble and tell me what he thinks.
That looks good.
Oh. It's quite a big nibble, so he might take a while to respond. But it's all staying together in quite a slice.
That's really nice.
So it is definitely reminiscent of fig rolls, but sort of in a more cheesecake bar-y form. A bit tastier than a breakfast bar though, not as dry. And I highly recommend it. They're really easy, they go down really well. And like I said, you can use absolutely anything in it. They're also raw, which is very fashionable at the moment, so you could be on trend with all of your party guests, which is very important. And they taste really good. So simple, taste good, impress your guests. Yeah, I think you should definitely give it a go. And I'm just going to finish eating this now, so I'm off. Bye.
Do you know, I tasted that earlier. The one that Emily made.
So Emily bought some in, did she?
She bought some in, and I had some. You're right.
Tastes nice, or?
Yeah, so it was really nice. And what Emily said at the end there about figs, I can definitely corroborate that.
You like figs, don't you?
I like a fig biscuit. Yeah.
Do you like those fig rolls? You know when you used to have
them.
Yeah,
the fig roll biscuit.
They
still
do them.
Yeah, they do. They're not. You don't find them in as many places. And funny enough, I just got a tweet from someone that's listening to the show, who's a good friend of mine, Chris. Chris and Miriam have a house in Turkey, and they've got fig trees in the garden, and they have fresh figs for breakfast.
I love figs. I do find in the supermarkets they don't actually taste of anything. As soon as if you're abroad and you've got your own tree you're staying somewhere,
completely different.
Tastes incredible. Yeah. Really good. So it's been really awful for Ian Perry, who never responds to that name because his name's Badger.
Yep.
He's had to sit here, and because he's vegan, he hasn't been able to taste a single thing we've been eating. And he's been very patiently.
He has. He's been really good, hasn't he? Behaving himself there.
He has. And he's got a really great, very, very sort of colourful shirt on. And he's got a really nice hat.
He's a man after my own heart. Yep. We like a colourful shirt.
And if you want to see what Badger looks like, just go on our Twitter feed and you'll see a nice photograph of him. Mm. And Badger, his company manufactures chilled products that are ready to eat. And sold directly to the trade or to caterers or to any vegan who wants to try something a bit different.
Right.
And he's been a vegan for a couple of years. And basically, he really likes coleslaw and potato salad and egg mayonnaise. And could not find those as a vegan. Mm. Particularly egg mayonnaise, which if you're a vegan, you can't eat eggs. And I've got in front of me, so have you, Paul, a tub of egg mayonnaise that has neither eggs nor mayonnaise, but it looks like egg mayonnaise.
It's amazing, isn't it?
It's incredible.
When Badger told me that he'd made egg mayonnaise with no egg or mayo in it, I just laughed.
No, but it's there. It's in front of us.
And then he put a pot in front of me and I went, yeah, but where's the one you've made? Because it just looks like egg mayonnaise, bizarrely.
Yeah. So Badger, tell us, why did you become vegan?
I've been vegetarian since I was a teenager, and I went to a meeting with some other vegans and somebody gave me a DVD and I watched it and that was it. I thought, no, I can't do that anymore.
A DVD of?
I think
presumably
it was
not Carry On Camping. But
no, I think it was a DVD called Earthlings.
Yeah.
And it just shows you how animals are used in the dairy industry and the egg industry. So I obviously the meat industry, but people don't really think about the dairy and the egg industry.
Yeah.
And it was just horrendous. And once I saw a day-old calf being shot in the head, I thought, I can't do that anymore. Yeah. Just for a bit of cheese. I've never liked milk.
Yeah.
And I stopped overnight. I've never had anything since.
And have you found vegetarianism is much more sort of mainstream now, and lots of restaurants and pubs and people cater for it, some very, very badly, I have to say, and very lazily, I would say. But veganism, that's really quite hard to accommodate that, isn't it, if you want to go and eat out at the moment?
Well, surprisingly enough, a lot of the big chains are jumping on the bandwagon. Pizza Express, ZZ's.
Well, providing Nando's. Vegan stuff at last.
Yep.
Wow.
And there's lots of vegan restaurants, especially in London. There's also, I can't think of them all, but I mean, Pret have even opened a veggie branch.
Right.
And they said their favourite thing is all the vegan dishes.
Badger was telling me earlier as well that Nando's do a vegan.
Right.
Yeah, I can't imagine that. Well, I love Nando's.
But Paul, there are, over 500,000 people in Britain are now following a vegan diet. It's not a small number of people.
Well, we were discussing this, weren't we, Badger, about this whole approach to restaurants, chain restaurants especially, starting to cater for vegans. Well, of course, it's not just the sheer number of vegans. What you tend to have is one member of a family or a group may be a vegan. And the others aren't. So if your conventional restaurant, ZZ's or Pizza Hut or Nando's, doesn't cater for that vegan, the whole family or the whole group's going to walk out and go somewhere else.
Yeah. Absolutely. So maybe they're cottoning on to that.
Yeah.
Maybe. Now, why have you particularly produced potato salad, coleslaw and egg mayonnaise? What was the driver behind that? And I'm going to taste egg mayonnaise without egg mayonnaise.
When I was vegetarian, I quite often for lunch had egg mayonnaise sandwiches. And so I missed it, and I perfected it by messing around with lots of different recipes And then I couldn't believe there wasn't anybody making coleslaw and potato salad, so I thought, well, I'll make that as well. I mean, you can make that yourself, but who wants to do that when they need coleslaw or potato salad?
Mm. Talk amongst yourself.
No, I'm just tasting the egg mayonnaise. What is it made of?
It's chickpeas, pasta, and my own mayonnaise. It's my interpretation of mayonnaise.
I'm getting slight nuts there. Lisa, you're having some as well. What do you think?
It's really tasty.
Thank you.
Yeah, really good. You couldn't tell at all.
No, I've had people come at the stalls that I do Veg Fest and things like that, and they go, don't tell my kids that it hasn't actually got any eggs in it. And
Lisa's having another huge, big spoonful.
You got me going now.
Paul, you're a dedicated carnivore. Your thoughts on non-egg, non-mayo egg mayonnaise?
It worked for me. I just had a big dollop of it on a piece of bread. And
it's got a nut. I can taste the nut thing. Mm. Also a little bit of cress. It feels like it's got a little bit of cress flavour to it as well.
Yeah, I've started, because on the stalls, people are going, oh, I wish I had a sandwich. So I've started making a few sandwiches, and I've put cress in that, and it's really popular. Some people, really Fat Gay Vegan, who I believe you've had on the show before, he said, oh, I've done it with vegan bacon, like egg and bacon sandwich. He said, I've not had for years, and it's just like the real thing. You wouldn't know,
Yeah.
Some people don't want to go and replace their meaty things with other things. Other people do, so that's down to personal taste, really.
Mm. So egg mayonnaise for you? Are you selling it? Got great demand for it because it doesn't taste any different to me.
Yeah,
hardly.
Everywhere I go, people go, can you get it in my local shop? And I've been struggling for nearly a year now to get an organic rating, which I finally got last week. So now I have distribution in place. So it's just a case of going into your local health food shop and going to CLF Distributions in Southampton. Can you please get this in stock?
Okay. So if you're a vegan and you really love egg mayonnaise and you haven't had it for ages because it's something you've given up and you can't find a decent replacement, that is a very, very, very decent replacement.
Yes,
thank you very much. Need to ask for it. And what you need to do is go to badgersdairyfree.co.uk and find out information on there. And you just wouldn't know, really. Slightly nuttier than an egg, obviously. Well,
the interesting thing, funnily enough, I eat quite a lot of egg mayonnaise sandwiches. Normally, from a sandwich bar, a deli bar. Right. One of the things I find about the vast majority of them is it's mostly mayonnaise.
Right.
To be honest, you get a massive dollop of mayonnaise with a tiny bit of egg buried in there somewhere. You might as well just have a mayonnaise sandwich. What you've produced there, though, was far more substantial and tastier because it wasn't just a dollop of mayonnaise with something in it. It was a full-blown thing.
Hmm. And not only that, it's better for you. So no cholesterol, there's no colours, no sugars, no sweeteners, no hydrogenated fats or oils. Mm. What else can I say?
As someone that's permanently on a diet,
although,
would you believe?
Although, listeners, he has just eaten three Nom Nom Mega Meals.
Yeah, but that was different.
And nearly all of the egg mayonnaise
that was,
and the
that
accompaniments
that
and
was
the
work. That was
work, yeah. Wonder why he's on a diet.
But seriously, with both you guys, the reason that I love your food is because it's healthier. It's better quality. It's got none of the rubbish in that, people put in food. And that's been the biggest part of our problem is what we eat with our kind of on-the-go lifestyle all the time is rubbish. It's not good for you.
I think people are becoming more aware of what they're putting in their mouths. So
there is definitely a clean food movement going on. Mm. Definitely. The other thing I know that you're very keen on is the packaging.
There's two more pots I haven't had a go at yet. Letting you know.
Have a little go of the coleslaw and the potato salad. I know packaging is really important to you as well, because if you're going to be vegan and you'll go to all that trouble to come up with these recipes, then obviously what you package it in is quite important too.
Yeah, I researched everything, the glues, the inks, made sure they're not tested on animals or made from animals, which has actually held me up with my organic rating for 6 months because I use biodegradable pots. They said, oh, no, you can't use biodegradable pots, you've got to use plastic, which I was specifically trying to avoid.
Yeah.
And I searched for 6 months all over the world, and apparently the plastic ones are all slightly bigger than the biodegradable ones, so they don't fit in my sleeves. 6 months down the road, the Soil Association came back and said, oh, actually, you can use those. Yeah. So that was a lot
of
the
delay. And
these
are all learning curves, aren't they, when you do start a new business?
Yes, they certainly are.
We're running out of time a little bit because we've eaten so much of the curry. Paul has. So I just want to ask you another question.
Okay.
The thing for me is so many vegans say to me, cheese. I'm trying to find a really good vegan cheese. And everybody's got their own opinion. What's your opinion, Badger, on a good
it
vegan cheese?
Do you know one? What you want to do with it. Vergusto is very good. There's also some artisan cheese makers who have turned vegan. And so there's exciting things to come. But it's not just cheddar replacements now. You can get mozzarella, you can get parmesan, you can get blue cheeses, you can get all sorts of different melty
cheeses. And where would you advise
cheeses.
People to look if they were trying to source some really different sort of good vegan stuff? You know, where do you go for your things?
A decent health food shop. We usually get stuff in if you ask them. Okay. My local one didn't have the cheese that I wanted. I said, can you get that? Yes, no problem. And they ended up stocking it.
Mm. I think it's Pizza Express. If you go into Pizza Express and take your own cheese, yep. they will put it on the pizza for you.
Okay, that's right. I didn't realise that. That might be quite good.
Mm. They do tend to go a bit heavy on the cheese. They like to use the whole packet, though. So
tell them how warned, much. Yeah. Tell them how much
I've told them, and they still
insist. I want change from my cheese, please.
I've tried.
And are you seeing specific, you know, sort of trends at the moment in restaurants and you know, some of the people you're supplying? Are they just doing it just to, I don't know, you know, just be part of the crowd, or do you really feel there's an interest where they're thinking we need to do this because, as Paul said, whole families have got very different requirements and we need to accommodate.
I think it's definitely changing. When I was a vegetarian, you used to get a lot of slating about being a vegetarian. Now, when you tell people you're vegan, it's not like a few years ago. People are actually going, oh, why? You know, they're actually asking questions. They're interested. Why?
Yeah. Hmm.
Which is great. People are opening their eyes to animal suffering at last, I think, you know, and healthy food. So.
Yeah, I mean, I don't eat a lot of meat, but I do eat meat and I love fish. And for me, I really, really try hard in my spending power to spend it where I think, you know, that food's been produced what I would consider to be properly. And, you know, hopefully there's going to be no space and no time and nobody's buying the stuff where it's not, you know, it's been produced badly. But of course, so much of it is down to price.
Yeah.
And people have got to accept if you want good food, you do have to pay for it, because cheap food means people cut corners. And that's just the bottom line, really.
Well, if something's called a factory farm, that, you know,
that tells you everything you need to know.
It's just wrong. It shouldn't be with animals at all.
No,
it's not.
Absolutely. Well, thank you very much, Badger. And as we said, badgersdairyfree.co.uk. Really would urge you to try the egg mayonnaise.
I've just eaten a potato salad as well.
That's nice, isn't it?
It's nice, yeah.
I'm impressed by the egg mayonnaise, though, because that is something for me, something really new and different.
And it, as you say, it's something that people crave when they give up other kinds of food. And it's a simple thing as well, isn't it?
Yeah.
It is the kind of thing, that's why delis sell so much of it in sandwiches, because it's an easy thing to put between two slices of bread.
That's right, yeah.
Absolutely. And, of course, we've got Lisa Sampal, and you in particular, were really, really impressed, weren't you, with Nom Noms.
So, I just ate it all.
So please go on to nomnomsworldfood.com and you'll see all that stuff on there. It's really, really lovely. And, of course, definitely go on the website. You can order it through Ocado, and you were really impressed, weren't you?
Or Amazon Fresh, she said as well. Yeah, cool.
And Amazon Fresh, yeah.
Yeah.
Also, we're going to be out and about this weekend, aren't we, Paul?
We are. We're going to London.
We're going to London.
We're going out to London.
But not to see the Queen.
No.
We're all going to be at Speciality and Fine Food Fair 2016 at Olympia. Mm. So if anybody's around, please come and see us on our stand. We've got our radio show there for 3 days. Mm. And we're looking forward to meeting lots of new friends who are doing incredible things in the food industry.
Yeah, we've got a pop-up radio station there, so come and get interviewed, basically.
Yeah, come and talk to us. And it's the foodtalkshow.co.uk. No, foodtalk.co.uk, I should say. Mm. And you can find out lots about it on there. And we can't wait. Well, you're supposed to be on a diet, Paul, starting on the 1st of September today.
She does this to me all the time.
It hasn't gone very well today. And I'm suspecting that being at Olympia for a couple of days isn't going to do you much good either.
No. Anyway, that's enough from us. We'll be back next week with the Food Talk Show.
Thank you, Lisa. Thank you, Badger. Thank you.
Cheers now. Bye-bye.
Thank you.